We really don't mind, and the number to ring, of course, is 955-1152. After 7, you can talk back to Jane Mills, who's compiled a dictionary of words to do with women. If you'd like to know the origins of floozy, flippity-gibbet, or fanny, then that's the time to call on 955-1152. After 7.30, we'll meet exorcist Terry O'Sullivan, who has strange tales to tell and also believes that being possessed by a spirit is far more common than you might think. And then after 8, it's the quiz hour, your chance to win the telecom talkback telephone and a place in the final, which could take you and 5 friends to Wembley for champagne at a Neil Diamond concert on November the 20th. All that happening between now and 9 on London Talkback Radio, 11.52.
In the 1970s. If you're aged 55 or over, Bank of Ireland will pay you special interest.
Eve Jones on London Talkback Radio. Call now on 955-1152.
And it's good to be with you on this Thursday evening. Every day, hundreds of thousands of listeners are tuned to Talkback's breakfast show with Bob and Doug, Messrs. Wellings and Cameron. But this is Bob and Doug Mark II, because for years before the era of Crown, over they are, and Talkback 1152, another Bob was getting up at an ungodly hour in order to inform and entertain the early morning audience. His face, of course, is as well known as his voice, which BH is sitting opposite me now. It's Bob Holness. Welcome, Bob.
Great to see you.
Are you and were you ever a naturally early morning person?
Oh, yes, I was. Yes? And even if I wasn't one to begin with, I certainly became one. I guess when I was a youngster, when I was in my teens, which was an eon ago, I actually used to be fairly lazy in the mornings. I used to be a Saturday morning lion type person. And then, I hate to hark back to this, when I went and did my national service for 2.5 years, I got into the routine because I became a radar operator and did this night shifts and things. Got in the routine of breaking sleep up and getting up early in the morning. And it stayed with me. So that when I was persuaded, coerced, to come in and join Doug in the very early days to do the AM show, I looked at it with some trepidation. I thought, I don't know. 3.30 in the morning is a little bit on the early side, but let's have a go. And I said, yes, I'll do it for 3 months. So I did it for 10 years. And yes, I do find it difficult to get up. But the most difficult thing of the lot was staying awake in the evening.
Yes.
You get to be an early morning person. You get to wake up in the morning and know what beautiful delights there are at that time of the morning. You could motor into London without seeing anything except the odd fish wagon going to Billingsgate. You could see the sun come up. I often used to mention with Doug that we saw the sun come up over the A40, and that's something to see.
Yes, certainly.
And that was great, that early morning part. But the awful thing was the evening, because we would go out to eat, we would go to the theatre, we'd go to the show, to film, anything. And I'd be asleep in the first act and all the soup or whatever. You know, you'd nod off. People who know us, learned to talk around me and pretend it wasn't happening.
Yes, what is not the life and soul of the party?
Not exactly, not unless the party's a breakfast party.
That's right. Have you, or did you have at that time, and maybe you still have, little early morning routines? I always found that when I only did AM at the weekends for 2 years, but never. Nevertheless, there were little things that I more or less had to do each morning in order to get me up and out.
Well, like washing.
Well, that sort of thing. Well, there are those who wash and shave and do the full shtick before they go in to do early morning broadcasting. There are others who I would call sort of breakfast show scrubs who just sort of roll in off the street more or less.
I'm a fairly methodical person. I think that comes from the old national service as well, you know, making the bed and washing properly and cleaning the teeth and shaving at the right time. Mm. I got into a sort of rhythm in those early days and it's never left me. Now, here's a secret coming out, Steve. I haven't told many people this, and I don't really know whether I should. Every morning, have a hot shower and then a cold shower. And I have done that for as many years. I don't want any surreptitious remarks about this. As many years as I can remember, when I finished the old soap down and everything, I just whap the hot off and stand and turn under the cold tap, and that wakes you up better than anything in the world.
Yes.
And it stayed with me. Midwinter, I still do it. I don't know for as long midwinter as I do in the summer, but I've always been a hot and cold shower man. Mm. And believe me, that gets you up early and it gets you cracking early.
That probably stems from the National Service days too, when you knew that there was nothing more exciting than a spot of square bashing in prospect for the rest of the day.
You're right. Yeah.
I didn't realise until I was thumbing through a little cutting not so long ago. No. This is to do with this radio station again, or its predecessor. We have now, of course, Brian Wolfe with the Evening Standard Lookout in the mornings, but in fact, you were the first man in London to do that, or give that aerial view of the traffic, weren't you?
Yes, the man in charge in those days was a gentleman called Marshall Stewart, and he got on to me because I used to work with Doug with the other lot many, many years ago in the news side.
Yes.
And Doug used to report, and I was presenting. And he got on to me and said, will you come and join us here at LBC? And I said, well, yes, all right. What do you want me to do? And he said, we'd like you to go up in a helicopter every morning. And I stopped short. I said, this is unheard of. And he said, yes, we want LBC to be the first radio station in the country to start an early morning traffic service in the air. And it was great fun. For 8 months, I actually got up at, I don't know what time I got up, but I took off about 7:30 from Denham and or the other air station over there, which I can't remember the name. Leavesden.
Oh, yes, yes.
Leavesden,
yes.
Or Denham. It finished up at Denham. And a smashing guy called Mike Smith, no relation, used to pilot the aircraft.
Yes, we, you wouldn't have wanted the current one, would you?
No, that's true. That's true. No. I mean, fate worse than death. Yeah. Anyway, yes, and we used to chunter along the Thames. There's a set routine. I wonder how many people realise it. I take it it still exists. If you've got a single-engine helicopter, you can come along the A40 and or M40 to as far as the Hanger Lane intersection there, and then down the Gunnersbury Avenue to the Thames. You cannot fly unless you've got special permission on any other but that route. And we used to do that exact route, and then you're over the Thames. And over the Thames, you're okay, and you have to stick to the Thames until you get to Tower Bridge, and then you can actually fly free. And we had that routine every single morning for 8 months.
This is because of Heathrow and the flight paths.
I suppose so, yes. And because it's a single-engine helicopter, they don't like you actually going over the built-up areas. But we got to December that year, and that was the second year of LBC, and Mike said to me, it's a bit difficult going back today because we've got a bit of fog. And I said, yeah, I can see that. I've been worrying, Mike, about the fact that you haven't got an artificial horizon. Does it matter? He said, no, I've got used to it. He says, with these Hughes 300s, you don't have an artificial horizon, but it has its disadvantages. And I said, well, what's one of them? He said, well, there is only one. If you're in 10/10 cloud, you actually don't know which way up you are. And I said, but surely you can tell if you're upside down. No. He said, when you're strapped in, you could be any way up. And your survival time in 10/10 cloud over a built-up area is 2 minutes, and you'll end up against the side of a building. And you cannot fly these very small helicopters in anything but moderate conditions. This is why very often we couldn't take off, because the weather was not too good. That decided me that I wouldn't actually do it through the winter.
Now, you resigned your position immediately.
And joined them in the studio.
Yeah, that's right.
I came down in the afternoon, first of all. Yeah. Paul Callum was doing the afternoon in those early days.
Yeah.
I replaced Paul Callum, which was a joy to me. And then I moved across and joined Doug in the early morning show. And as you said earlier, for 10 years, that's what I did.
Right. Well, I'm going to come right up to date, of course, in a moment or two. I'd better take a break, producer. I suppose we'd better have it. It's 6:15. But I want to talk about thespian matters, though, in just a moment with Bob Holness right after this.
Look at me. 2.5 years old. I'm having a breakdown. My warranty's run out. If only I'd been a Toyota. They'd have looked after me. Toyota's new warranty covers parts and assembly defects right up until you're 3 years old.
All new Toyotas, registered from October the 1st, are comprehensively covered by a free 3-year, 60,000-mile manufacturer's warranty. For more details, call 0800 300 700.
Here's great news from the famous Big Red Building in Petticoat Lane. Gold Range is being relaunched. Yes, we're open for business as usual and celebrating with an amazing scoop purchase of beautiful sheepskin coats by Morland for men and women. And don't forget our vast selection of leathers, suedes and flying jackets at prices you'll find hard to beat. So treat the whole family this weekend at Gold Range, Petticoat Lane, the Old Gate End. Open all week and Sundays till 2.
The Big Red Building in Petticoat Lane.
The Steve Jones Show from Talkback Radio, 11:52. Our special guest this evening is Bob Holness. In fact, Bob's staying with us for the entire hour because we're going to involve him in the dinner party after 6:30. But more details of that as the evening progresses. So we're going to talk about things thespian in a moment. But of course, you were just telling me you've been at the National Theatre most of today.
Yes, most of today. It's been what they call Student Day at the National Theatre, and it's been really very, very exciting. I went in just after lunch. I had some work to do in a studio at Bush House earlier on. Mm-hmm. Then at lunchtime, I went across, and I chaired an entertainment quiz on stage at the National today with Stephen Fry and Sylvester McCoy and Jessica Martin and Barry Cryer and a team of students answering general entertainment questions. Great fun. We packed the Littleton Theatre, absolutely packed it. The students packed the whole building this afternoon. They're absolutely thousands of them there. Very good. So the whole thing's sponsored by Thames, and it's a very, very good idea. I hope they do it every year. But the only reason I mentioned this is it connects with what we were saying about the helicopter.
Oh, right.
Well, somebody said, didn't you used to do this in the air? And I said, yes, and I can date it exactly. 73, 74 it was, because I persuaded Mike Smith to take the door off the helicopter on one of the trips we'd done the Thames, and he hovered over the National Theatre when it was being built. And I took my Pentax up and took some beautiful photographs of the emergent National Theatre building from the air. And I had them blown up and sent some to Peter Hall, who had them framed and put on his wall. But I came across those photos the other day, and they're quite historic.
Yeah.
When you think that it's now a permanent part of London.
There can't be anybody else who's taken that sort of photo.
I suppose not, really. Yeah. It's a nice thing to have.
Well, of course, theatre very close to your heart.
Very much. But
presumably you started out in show business as an actor.
Yes, I did. It was overseas, actually. I went over... I immigrated, in fact, with my parents in the 50s. My mother came from southern Africa, and I went over with them as a printer, because I was a journeyman printer. I'd served my apprenticeship, but I'd always liked acting and always wanted to do it professionally. And that was my chance. It's very often the case, you know, when somebody wants to do something, they go away and do it over there and then come back to Britain, which is exactly what I did. And I joined the local rep. It was just starting. It was an English rep called the Intimate Theatre in Durban. And I walked in. As one does, with all the bravado in the world, you know, miles from home, and sort of walked in and said, I think you can usefully use me, you know, with no theatre training as such. I'd done a lot of semi-pro work, but not actually professional work. So I joined the rep. It was fortnightly rep. I didn't play every fortnight, which was great fun. And that's where I met Mary, my wife, who'd come over for a year's contract from London. Everybody at the theatre had come over from London. Great fun days, really, very good. We used to study our lines, bobbing about in a boat on the Durban Bay, you know, that sort of thing.
Very nice stuff indeed. Since becoming an established broadcaster, have you been tempted back to the boards in the way, say, that Richard Whitmore has? In fact, he's given up broadcasting altogether. He doesn't newscast anymore, of course. He's more or less a full-time actor now, I think.
Yes, only in certain ways. I long ago became the president of the local dramatic society, and from time to time they used to do old-time musicals. And I'd been known to get up there in me wellies and sing Polly Perkins from Paddington Green and things like that. Only nonsense things. I've done one or two charity things, as long as there aren't too many lines. You get a built-in insecurity thing about remembering lines when you get to a certain age. And
I've passed it too.
Even now, I might tell you, I have in my case a script, because on Sunday week I'm appearing at the along with a whole lot of other people in a charity performance in Windsor at the Theatre Royal in Windsor. What beautiful, beautiful theatre, Theatre Royal Windsor. It's a play called Long Island Sound, an old Coward play that's none of them been presented. I don't think it's ever been presented over here. And this. A massive production with 27 in the cast and all sorts of people who are known in the business are doing this charity show. And I actually have some lines in this play. And I'm filled with just a little trepidation because I haven't actually quoted lines on stage in a play for many, many years.
Yes, because there's the big difference, of course, between being an actor and being a broadcaster. As a broadcaster, one is more or less oneself all the time. I mean, if you're feeling a little bit rough one morning or even one evening, if it comes to that, of course, you try and overcome that. So there's a bit of performance involved. But it's one reason, I think, why sometimes certain actors, and you will have come across them, don't make great interview subjects because bereft of script, they don't have a great deal to say for themselves.
No, that's true, that's true. Happily, we didn't come across them too often in the AM show. We used to have a lot of actors towards the end of my stint on the show, came in between 9 and 10. And in the main, we were lucky enough to pick actors who could speak and liked to talk. We had the occasional one. There was one gentleman who actually was a very good Hollywood actor. He'd got a little... long in the tooth and long in the hair and long in the beard when he came along, and he'd written a book about the sea, and he came in and stomped in with a stick. I remember he was live, and Douglas flinched, and so did I, as he sat down and sprawled across the chair and said, "What do you want?" And I said, "Well, I just like to know," and I asked him the initial question, and the answer came out something like, "Well, and we looked at each other, and I thought, I've still got the cassette at home. It was probably one of my most embarrassing experiences. That interview lasted all in all about 7.5 minutes, and he uttered, I suppose, about half a dozen genuinely interesting words. All the rest of the time he was talking, neurotic and slightly eccentric. You know, he was a very odd gentleman. He should be nameless.
All part of a broadcaster's life.
Oh, yes. Fun.
Absolutely. Bob Holness is our guest on Talkback Radio 1152, and we'll be back again after this message.
If you're going skiing this year, there's only one place to head for, the top, Harrods Ski Shop. There you'll discover the latest skis by K2, Rossignol and Head, the season's new boots from Salomon and Nautica, as well as colourful designs in ski wear from Navica, Keeley and Schoeffel. To prevent any slip-ups, there's even a ski workshop for servicing and fitting bindings, with a trained technician to help and advise. The Harrods Ski Shop, now open on the fourth floor with everything you need for the slopes. Just keep your fingers crossed for the snow.
The Shell Agency Fuel Card, as a method actor would describe it.
Hey,
Hey, come on, Mikey. I mean, what is this? Because, you know, I love you, Mikey. You're my brother, huh? But I also love this car, Mikey. This car can be used at over 5,000 petrol stations, huh? You know what I'm talking about? So come on, Mikey, what is this, huh? The whole fleet can use it, huh, Mikey? Come on, huh? Come on. Hey, come on. Come on. Come on. Hey, come on. Hey, come on. Hey, come on, huh? The company gets just one bill, huh? One bill, Mikey. That's one bill, huh?
The Shell Agency fuel card is a good idea, however it's described. It saves the company time and trouble, and it's free. Call 01200-0200 for details.
Hello, Douglas Cameron here. And as you know, I have breakfast with Bob Wellings and you from 6 to 9, Monday to Friday, here on London Talkback Radio. Not only do we feature the news and your views, the weather and the sport, but we've got the most comprehensive view of London's rush hour traffic, including the eagle eyes of Brian Wolfe, flying at 1,000 feet on board the Evening Standard London Lookout. Hear what we say and have your say here on London Talkback Radio, 11:52 a.m.
Could make a broadcast of that boy, Bob.
Yeah, it's a mystery voice. I'm just trying to... Evening, Doug, if you're listening.
Yeah, I'm sure he is, along with Marge at home at the moment. It's 24 minutes past 6 on London Talkback Radio, the Steve Jones Show, and Bob Holness, of course, is with us. We've only got about 5 minutes left in this part of our conversation together. Then we'll move into the dinner party. So we've got to talk about blockbusters now. Mm. Did you find that working with young people as contestants is actually more fun? Do they make better contestants than the adult variety, do you think?
They're a little more... unpredictable in their reactions, and unpredictable in almost every way. Yes, I suppose you're saying, what you're saying is, yes, are they more exciting contestants, and are they less inhibited? The answer is yes.
I suppose so. A little more genuine as
well.
That's
right. Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah. They. It's interesting that, you know, we've just done our seventh series, and we recorded the 120th show for this year last Friday. I've just come back from Birmingham. Mm. And, in fact, they won't be transmitted until next year. They've been held up this year for some reason. It's a network thing. They start going out in January, and that'll be the seventh series. And I've noticed the difference. We see some of the older series because they actually repeat them from time to time. Mm. And the difference is quite astounding between the performance of the young people in those days and the performance of the young people now. They've now learned the name of the game. They've learned what gets laughs. They've learned... whether or not to bring mascots, how to behave, how to answer questions. And they are such an important part of the programme that if it were made into a family show, which is what so many people ask of Central Television, I don't think it would have that appeal. Mm. It's that unexpected aspect of the performance on the programme that makes it so attractive. They are super. They really are.
And it gives it family appeal, though, at the same time, because everybody knows a teenager, you see.
Absolutely right. And I'll tell you what, there's a reassurance factor, Steve, in that... I suppose 80% of our audience, at least from the letters, are older people, a lot of them retired, a lot of them very old, and they write and say how nice it is, after picking up the paper in the morning and seeing all the brutality and awfulness that happens with some elements, to look at that show in the evening and think, well, there are people between 16 and 18 who behave well, attractively, and are pleasant, you know, and it is a reassurance factor. Right. It matters a lot, you know.
Talking about the difference in teenagers now and then, again, this is off the top of my head, I haven't been looking through the archives of this, no, was it Junior Crisscross Quiz?
Yes, it was. Yes,
it was.
Yes,
so that again was with the young people.
Yes, 1963, that was.
Was it?
That was with Granada, 63. Yes.
I could almost have been on that. Not quite, but almost.
And then, of course, not long after that, when I went back to Sound Radio, it was Top of the Form.
Yes.
And I did quite a lot of Top of the Form. And in fact, funnily enough, there are schools represented on blockbusters from time to time, which I visited in Top of the Form days. That was good fun.
Right. Of course, one of the other Top of the Form people was Paddy Feeney, who, with whom you share an interest in BBC World Service broadcast.
Right. And Geoffrey Wheeler, too.
And Geoffrey Wheeler, that's right. Yeah. Now, what's your show on the World Service? Anything Goes, isn't it?
That's right,
is that
the title of that? You have done your homework.
Oh, absolutely.
Well done.
You started off with limericks, apparently, each week. Now, do they understand this in the far-flung corner
they're
of the world?
They're not exactly limericks. They're two verses of five lines. They're not diddle-diddle-diddle-dum, diddle-diddle-diddle-dum. They're on a different rhythm. They are funny poems. Well, I hope they're funny anyway, which I make up every week and have done. It started... the programme itself, Anything Goes, has been going for 13 years now, every week for 13 years. And in about the third year, I thought, just as a bit of a... I've always liked making up little verses, and I just did it as a giggle. And now I've hoisted with my own petard, because I have to do this every week now. We sometimes get suggestions from people, and some very good suggestions, some of them, and I utilise them and give credit where credit's due. We have some suggestions that are appallingly bad, but we skip over those. And it's very much an audience involvement show. It's It's a show which promises to play anything at all anybody wants to hear, providing it's within the bounds of decency.
Yes, yes.
And providing it's on record and or on tape and in the archives. And it means that the archive people rub their hands when they see us coming because they actually get used a lot.
Yeah.
And people can write for a cricket commentary, a funny moment in history. They can write for a famous speech, the latest pop, a big band jazz classic, anything at all. And we play it. We promise to play it. If it's available or on record, you'll hear it.
What a terrific idea. And of course, as I say, you can pick it up just all over the world.
Yes, you can, yes. Mm-hmm. And we get letters from, even behind the Iron Curtain, we've had many letters from Moscow of late, and from China as well. It's quite extraordinary.
Mm. Did you get to visit these places and go and see the audience, or?
No, I'd like to. I mean, if I do, it's only under my own steam and at my own cost. Nobody's ever said, hey, Bob, do you want to go out and visit the people you talk to? And likewise, nobody's ever said, because we give away on Blockbusters prizes like, for instance, the Orient Express or the yes. QE2 or Concorde, nobody's ever said, would you like to research one of these trips just to say how good it is?
What a terrible shame.
I know.
Well, we're going to break for travel now and the new sequence and all the sort of stuff which, of course, you're well familiar with. Mm-hmm. Then we'll be into the dinner party.
Yes.
So just start thinking about those guests right now. So dinner party with Bob after the news. Before that, of course, we're going to cross to the AA and here's Graham Lyle.
The A205 Catford Road. The bus has broken down by Catford Bridge Station. It's causing some delays at the moment. Sussex Gardens. Lancaster Terrace is closed at the junction with the A40 Bayswater Road due to burst water main repairs. There are diversions in force. And on the A406 Gunnersbury Avenue at Ealing, there's emergency gas board work at the junction with Crosslands Avenue. Temporary lights are in use and they're slowing things down in both directions. Strand has three sets of roadworks eastbound between Trafalgar Square and Aldwych. They're causing the usual delays. The A2 Rochester Way at Bexley, there's a contraflow between the Danton Interchange and the Black Prince Interchange. M25 anti-clockwise, a 1 mile tailback from junction 2, the A2 interchange, due to roadworks on the interchange roundabout. M3 southbound, heavy traffic between junctions 2 and 3, the M25 and Lightwater interchanges, just the weight of traffic there. And the M25 anti-clockwise, that's slow between junctions 8 and 6, Reigate and Godstone. Graham Lyle, AA Road Watch.
For detailed and informative share price charts, contact Chart Research Services Limited. We can provide you with up-to-date share price charts to assist your market analysis. Make the right decision. Call Chart Research Services on 877-1879. Chart Research Services, 877-1879.
This is Talkback Radio, 11:52, 6:30 the time, and the news headlines. Three of the Guildford Four have now been reunited with relatives following the quashing of their convictions for the IRA pub bombings at Guildford and Woolwich. Although the conviction against the fourth, Paul Hill, was also quashed, he was immediately rearrested outside the Old Bailey and flown to Belfast. There he'll face a hearing tomorrow about his conviction for the murder of a British soldier. The appeal court judges quashed the convictions after hearing that police had lied and suppressed evidence at the original trial. An immediate inquiry into the conduct of Surrey police has been ordered and two serving officers have already been suspended. Two aftershocks have rumbled through the Bay Area of San Francisco, which has been devastated by Tuesday's earthquake, which claimed at least 273 lives. The jolts were felt 60 miles south of the city and measured up to 5 on the Richter scale. And finally, Britain and Argentina have agreed to patch up government relations which were broken off during the Falklands War 7 years ago. In a joint statement issued after 3 days of talks in Madrid, both countries have agreed to resume consular relations and direct air and sea links. A full bulletin, of course, coming your way at 7 o'clock. The weather from Jim Kelts for this evening is as follows. A few hours of rain later on, which will please the gardeners, of course, and a stiff breeze around, too. In fact, it's going to be a wind coming from the south. Then fine later in the night, colder than it was yesterday evening, down to 11 in town and 9 in outlying areas. Tomorrow, bright and breezy in the morning, clouding over quickly in the afternoon, and there will be heavy rain and strong winds later on Friday. The top temperature tomorrow, 15 degrees.
The Metronote Business Efficiency Report. Copying in full color. The new Canon color laser copier is so versatile. Perfect for presentations and publicity. It copies 35mm slides onto paper, enlarges originals to poster size, and all in true full color. The Canon color laser copier. Available from Metronote on their flexible copy cost scheme. You only pay for the copies. We can even include the paper. Metronote, call 01252-8111.
Now you can afford to top up your company pension scheme because they've reduced your national insurance. Phone Canada Life on 0800 400 400. Don't be a dipstick, do it now.
Okay, it's 6:33. This is London Talk Wagon Radio, and as always on Thursdays, it's the bit in the show where we dim the lights, lay the table, and think about that perfect dinner party. You are invited, of course, but to earn your place at the table, you have to come up with a list of the guests that you would most like to spend the evening with. They can, as I said earlier, be living or dead, famous or notorious. If you think they'd be good company, they can even be fictitious. In the past, for instance, we've had William Shakespeare making small talk with Marilyn Monroe and David Bellamy passing the salt to any old earl. That was a suggestion by Nigel Rees, in fact. Any old earl. He didn't have a specific one in mind. Well, Bob Holness is staying on to chew over his guest list with me, but of course, who would you choose and what would you serve at this table for six? Call us now, please, between now and 7 o'clock on 9:55, 11:52, and share your dreams with yours truly, Bob Holness, and the rest, of course, of London and the South East. Right, I should welcome you again, Bob, really, to another part of the show.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's nice to be back.
Wasn't time to nip out for very much there.
No, that's true.
So, are you a great one, first of all, for dinner parties, as opposed to the sort of party where there are thousands and nibbly bits?
Oh, much prefer that. Much prefer. Don't often go in for it, unfortunately. It's one of those things that I sometimes say to Mary, we really should have so-and-so around for a meal, mm-hmm. You know, not only because we owe them, but because we like their company. And she says, yes, that's a good idea, and so-and-so as well. And we make that solemn declaration and then forget about it. And about 6 months later, we realise we haven't had anybody round for ages and ages. It's not that we're antisocial, it's just that one's been rather busy, you know. And
yes.
One should actually force oneself to cut through all that and be sociable.
Sure, it's so easy to lose contact with people.
Awful, yes.
Because you can find also that you if you do have people around to dinner, they tend to be the same three or four.
You're right.
And, of course, and they live maybe only, within walking distance,
right.
So they don't have to drive home and it's all over.
And they never go.
That is true.
Because they know you that well, they think they're specially privileged. And you're sitting there at 2 a.m, trying to stifle a yawn. You're
yes,
like, oh,
yes.
No. It's not on, really, but it happens all too often, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Okay, well, let's start with your first guest, Anne. And who will it be? We'll never discuss that.
Well, you know, I've interviewed the gentleman several times over the years, and each time he's been geniality itself, and each time he's been funny, informative, and somehow very, very kind and nice in the interviews, in that he's one of these people, and it's essential in this sort of programme, as you know, to have somebody who's got some sort of feeling for your angle. He knows you want him to talk. It's no good saying yes and no. And that man is Peter Ustinov.
Right.
Now, he's probably been mentioned before.
Not by a previous celebrity guest. I think it was one suggestion from a member of the audience a couple of weeks back.
A very good suggestion, because, you see, he's not only... He can be a terribly serious man as well. I actually did I've done 2 one-hour interviews with Peter Ustinov. And the first was when we used to do on LBC things called the London Interview.
Right.
And he was in town, and he came along, and I thought, right, we'll get some chuckles out of him, because I've long been a Ustinov fan since he's... early records, Mozart and phony folklore and things. And he was very serious, and he talked for an hour seriously about himself, and he was most entertaining. He can turn it on, he can do the impersonations, he can tell you about famous people he's met. He's a great name dropper. The last time I saw him was at the Theatre Royal in Bath. There was a special evening, and we went all the way to Bath to see him, and then I went up and said hello again afterwards. And he stood on the stage for an interminable time and just talked to the audience, leaning on a chair and sitting down sometimes because he's not getting any younger. And he was as entertaining then as he has been every time I've met him. He's the perfect dinner guest because he can talk about anything. He can talk about any language. He can talk about the people you'd love to meet. And he can also... give us a cabaret by doing impersonations of motor cars.
Yes. I mean, he's six or more guests in himself, really.
Oh, he is, yes.
Anyway.
And that's why he is the top of the guest list.
Right, okay, yes. I interviewed him, must be 3-4 weeks ago now, and great insights into what was going on behind the Iron Curtain immediately prior to the Gorbachev regime. I mean, obviously because of his background, he knows all about that sort of thing. It was fascinating stuff. The sort of man, in a way, where you could ask one question and lie back as an interviewer
for
the next hour and just let him go. Right, so Peter Ustinov at the head of the table, therefore.
I think so, one end, yes. Right. Yes. Now, I don't know where I'd sit. I suppose I should sit at the other end, but I'd prefer to sit along one of the sides, because at the other end, and this is not sexist in any way, I suddenly thought, you know, if you have 3 men and 3 women, it would balance things up.
Yeah.
Then I started to think, I don't know, I have a long-headed admiration for the man who wrote The Cruel Sea, Nicholas Montserrat.
Right.
Now, he was a genuinely interesting man who'd done a lot. He had quite a rippling sense of humour, and I first got to know him through the programme I used to do on World Service, and it was, nearly 20 years ago. Because I've been doing shows on there now for about 24 years. And I used to do ordinary request shows, and one day he wrote across. Then it changed to the show we were talking about, and he wrote from Gozo in the Mediterranean where he lived, where he'd retired to, and said he listens to World Service an awful lot, and it's a lifeline, and he'd very much like to hear a piece of music or a commentary. I can't remember what he asked for. And I duly put it over, and he came across and contacted me here at LBC and said, I'm in town and I'd like to sort of say hello, and if you want an interview, I'll come along. He put himself forward, so he came onto the programme, and he was superb. And he talked about writing, he talked about his trade, and he talked about the sea. And he's written books about the sea, not only the cruel sea, but other books as well. And there's one called The Catalan of Malta, and he went back. That was the one that had been published, he came over for. He went back, and 2 months later, a copy arrived in the post from Gozo, signed with gratitude and all that sort of thing. He was a tender-hearted, nice, apparently gruff man, but a wealth of earthy stories, and he would be a good storyteller to match up the lightness and the speed at which Peter Ustinov talks. Of course, Nicholas Montserrat talked a little more slowly and a little more precisely.
Well, but had he been a professional Navy man?
Yes, he had. Yes, he was in the Royal Naval Reserve when the war broke out.
Right.
And it was his experiences, really, during the war that prompted him to write The Cruel Sea.
Right, so he would definitely be number two on the list and very interesting indeed. We're going to take a break here now, Bob, and it's straight after that we're going to go to Bernadette. Before we continue with your list, sorry to interrupt you, but we'll have a break first and then talk to Bernadette in Ashstead. I think she's only got three dinner party guests. Maybe Bernadette possesses quite a small table, but we'll find out after this.
In 1971, General Motors made a rather special car. With four-wheel drive and battery power, it could attain a top speed of 10.5 miles per hour. It was lightweight, capable of carrying two people, a TV camera, and rock sampling equipment. Unless you're planning a trip to the moon, you can meet a car of the future made for you at the London Motor Show Motor Fair. At Earl's Court, on now until Sunday the 29th.
The beauty of owning a period home is the charm of its original design. And thanks to the original Box Sash Window Company, you don't have to give up your love of tradition to have double glazing installed. We can individually handcraft and fit double glazed sliding sash windows to the original period design. Talk to the first name in Box Sash Windows, the original Box Sash Window Company. For a free 20-page brochure, please dial 100 and ask for free phone Box Sash.
Friday's Pete Murray Show kicks off at 9 a.m. with the Alternative Health Clinic with our homeopathic doctor, Andrew Lockie. Then at 10, it's the Talkback Call-In, where we can discuss the topics of the day. Plus, of course, the quick quiz and your chance to win a magnificent prize. At 11, it's the TV Review, your chance to be an armchair critic on the current TV output. The Friday Pete Murray Show. 9 to midday, London Talkback Radio.
And through to London Talkback Radio 1152 is Bernadette in Ashstead. Is that in Surrey, Bernadette?
Right, yes, in Surrey.
Good
thing.
Right.
Good evening, Bernadette. How are you?
Good evening. Yes, thank you.
Right. So you said three dinner party guests. Was I correct in assuming that you have a smallish table?
That's right. I have a small... Yes, I possess a small table, correctly. If it was the Sultan, they could go out in the garden and I could put up a big table, but I don't know.
But you can always have a very friendly evening and invite guests to sit on each other's knees.
That's right. Yes, surely. I'd like Danny LaRue, because he could tell stories.
Oh, yes, he could.
And real good ones. And Margaret Forward from the newspaper, because she'd be telling tales.
Well, about people on television. She's with the Daily Express now, I think, Margaret, isn't she? Yeah?
Oh, yes. And Lord Snowden, because I've admired him for a good many years.
For what, for his photographic work,
oh,
or
yes,
what?
Yes, and for his finesse, and I think he's been a gentleman from, a long time.
It's interesting you should choose Lord Snowden, because, Bernadette, he was one of the guests I had in the fairly long running, I suppose it lasted for 3.5 years, these interviews I used to do, the 1 hour interviews with music in conversation.
Yeah.
And I went down to his studio and talked to him for an hour about his favorite choice of music and about his life. And I found him a very shy man, but once he got into his subject, very talkative and terribly sociable. He was very, very friendly, a very nice person indeed.
Yes, and I'd feel that because I have only a bungalow. And that But he wouldn't make me feel sort of that I was out of my depth and I'd have to do the cooking myself and the baking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd feel that I'd be quite comfortable with him.
Interesting trio.
I definitely would like to meet him. I think he's a lovely man and has behaved himself so well over the years. Mm.
Well, I think probably the way to meet him is to hang around in the centre of London and watch for a mini with black windows driving up and down Southampton.
You want me to run over?
Bernadette, thank you very much indeed for your choice.
Thank you for a lovely programme.
Oh, thank you, Bernadette.
Our pleasure to bring it to you. So Bernadette's choices were Danny LaRue, Margaret Ford and Lord Snowden. She's just got a bungalow, she said, so with those three guests, it would be a full house, the sort of thing which Danny LaRue, of course, is used to. More champagne, Jack.
Yeah. If only.
That's right. So, Bernadette, thank you for your choice. 9:55, 11:52, of course, is our telephone number. If you have a selection of dinner party guests, 6 is Bob's choice, of course, but if you can only find room for 3, then we don't mind, or maybe just a couple of people to share your evening with. But let's turn back to Bob's list now. We've got so far Peter Ustinov and Nicholas Montserrat.
Right. Yeah. Now we turn to one of the long ends of the table. Husband and wife.
Right.
John Dankworth and Cleo Lane.
Oh, right.
A good reason for this, really, because John I've known for many years. In fact, when I used to run a jazz club down in Ashford in Kent in my post-teens,
yes.
In fact, just in the teens, we actually booked... We were budding Harold Davidsons in those days, the little jazz club, and we used to book artists. We booked the Ray Ellington Quartet, a very, very classical outfit called Dr. Croc and his Crackpot.
Yes.
And we gave the Johnny Dankworth 7 their first Out of London concert at the Ashford Theatre. And I met Johnny then and got on with him very well. And we've remained in touch, on and off, over the years, ever since. And John and Cleo are such nice people. And John has a great, great sense of humour. He's one of these people. Cleo is a little more laid back. But once she gets talking, she talks. And they bounce things off each other so terribly well. And they would talk music. And music is one of my major interests. And they talk the sort of music I would love to discuss over a beef stroganoff.
Oh, yes. We now know what dish you're going to serve, anyway.
Oh,
yes. All right, so I'll just drop that down there. Beef stroganoff it is. Yes, they in fact, dropped in all too briefly a couple of weeks ago onto this show. They got stuck in traffic. They were supposed to be with me for a whole half hour and could only make it for 15 minutes. They've been doing a few concerts together, on tour at the moment, aren't they?
Mm.
I don't know if you've ever been along to any of those Barbican concerts, because I know you used to record programmes at the Barbican Centre, too, but John Dankworth is the director of the...
LSO Pops.
That's right. I would like to get to see that, this
even
year.
Even better, out at his rectory up there in Wavendon.
Yes.
He has the concert hall up there, which are absolutely marvellous. Mm. It's sort of mecca for jazz fiends.
Yes, absolutely. And the family, are, of course, following in their footsteps.
Yes, they are. Yes,
the son's a bass player, I think, in fact, touring with them at the moment.
Yes, he is.
Okay, so we have a husband and wife team there. I think you've got another one, too, but before we go to that, put on the headphones again, young Robert, because we have Barbara in Lambeth, and Barbara, very good evening to you.
Hello, good evening to you too.
Hello, Barbara.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you.
And to you too.
You've got 6 guests for us, haven't you, Barbara?
Five.
Oh, 5.
Yes.
So a medium-sized table.
Yes.
Oh, fine.
Because I'm assuming that I'm the other lady that will sit down to the meal as well, you see.
Oh, I see. So you've gone for 2 females and 3 males, have you?
No, actually, 4 males and 1 female.
Oh.
And me.
And you.
Aha.
Jimmy Cricket for his sense of humour.
Yes.
Alan Titchmarsh, because he's got the gift of the gab, and I also enjoy his gardening programmes when I have a chance to watch him.
Okay.
Hank Marvin, because he's a great musician as far as I'm concerned.
You'd have to pay for him to come from Australia, Barbara. That's where he lives now.
I don't care.
Next time he's over.
Yes, that's right. Desmond Tutu.
Right.
Because I think he might sort of... Well, I don't know. He's sort of... Slightly controversial, and yet I think he, on the other hand, could sort of pacify any arguments that might be.
He'd certainly talk, couldn't he?
He'd certainly talk, yes. Well, I think he might engender one or two arguments too, but he's also a man with a great sense of humour, I feel, as well.
Yes, he is, I think he is too.
Right.
And as I said to the young lady on the telephone, to have somebody to grace our table, who else could I ask for but Princess Diane?
Princess Diana, eh?
Yes, Diana.
Right.
Yes.
Small portions there, of course, Barb, because she tends to push it around the plate a little bit, to keep that silk-like figure together.
I should think Princess Diana and Jimmy Cricket would get on well, don't you think?
Come here, there's more.
There's more, I tell them. Yes. So that's the wrong person.
Yes, it is, actually. Yes, I wasn't going to say that.
Yeah. You do all right for the after-dinner music, of course, because Hank could strum a small guitar in the corner somewhere, couldn't
that's
he?
That's true, yes.
Right, and of course, I imagine that he and Desmond Tutu could get into quite a deep religious argument, too, because Hank is a Jehovah's Witness.
Yes, he is.
And he and Desmond would really get the conversation going there, wouldn't they?
So I think it would be a great evening.
It would be a great evening.
You would have to have a spare pair of slippers there, Barbara, because Jimmy Cricket would have his Wellingtons on, of course.
That's true.
Yes.
He could always go and squelch on the dog if he likes.
Yes, what a good idea.
Barbara, that's a great choice. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Right, cheers, Barbara.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. So that was Barbara in Lambeth, Jimmy Cricket, Alan Titchmarsh, Hank B, Marvin, Desmond, I don't know if he's got a middle name, but Desmond Tutu, and Princess Diana. Funny enough, Bob, that's the first time that she's been mentioned by anybody on the phone, yes, and I would have thought it might have been one of the most obvious people would want to come round.
Yes, I would have thought so, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a break now, and then, because Bob's got another two guests, is it to come, or another three?
Another two.
Mm. Right, so we'll talk about them right after this, and don't forget, you can dial in with your selection on 955 1152.
If your windscreen's in need of a fix,
a broken windscreen isn't your problem, it's ours. Call Autoglass and we'll fix it fast. Call Autoglass and relax. Autoglass, 0800 36 36 36.
We'll be here to fix it all, 0800 36 36 36.
You've been to India, haven't you? Haven't you? You mean you've never seen the Taj Mahal, the palaces of Rajasthan, the markets, the carved temples? I mean, what have you been doing with yourself? Especially when no less a firm than Hayes & Jarvis can give you a 14-day tour from only £499. Ring Hayes & Jarvis on 01748-5050 for a copy of their brochure. Don't let another year go by. Ring 748-5050 now.
Hello, Douglas Cameron here. And as you know, I have breakfast with Bob Wellings and you from 6 to 9, Monday to Friday, here on London Talkback Radio. Not only do we feature the news and your views, the weather and the sport, but we've got the most comprehensive view of London's rush hour traffic, including the eagle eyes of Brian Wolfe, flying at 1,000 feet on board the Evening Standard London Lookout. Hear what we say and have your say here on London Talkback Radio, 11:52 a.m.
Do you think he's doing this deliberately, Bob?
I think he is, you know. I was getting a little uncomfortable. I keep looking around, thinking Dougie's coming in through the door.
You just can't get rid of the man. This is Talkback Radio, 11:52. Of course, it's the Steve Jones Show. Bob Holness is with us, and it's our dinner party. There is time for you to give us a call on 9:55, 11:52. But you have two further guests to introduce us to. Who are they going to be?
You know, this is not the definitive list, you know, Steve. It was very, very difficult to know who to choose. Mm. And Barbara mentioning Hank B. Marvin made me think of Cliff, of course. And I've known Cliff a long time. I met him in 1959-60. Overseas, in Africa. I had him on my show and did an interview with him in those early days. In fact, I was looking out a photo the other day with me clutching a microphone and holding it out to him to be... You've never seen two such juvenile-looking idiots in their life. And I suddenly thought Cliff would be ideal, because Cliff's one for talking, isn't he?
Yes, of course, absolutely.
However,
he's an extra guest, then.
He's an extra
guest. A late comer.
If he happens to knock at the door, right?
Yes, fine.
Well, we've had the all-rounder Peter Ustinov, who can do anything. We've had Nicholas Montserrat, who's a great author. We've had the music from John Dankworth and Cleo Lane. And we're back to the theatre again, I'm afraid. And it's another husband and wife. It's Judy Dench and Michael Williams.
Oh, really?
And the reason is because they are both, such nice people. They spark each other off with conversation. Michael's a very shy person. And Judy is not over-pushy. I mean, Judy is very subdued, but she can talk, and she's super. I have the greatest admiration for Judy Dench. She's one of my favourite people. And she is so talented in so many different areas, and so is Michael, that I think... Of all the theatre people, I think I would love to have conversation with them over the smoked salmon.
The smoked salmon. Oh, yes. we've had the main course, haven't we? So the smoked salmon to start with. Mm. Okay, fine. But then what, with a little shabby or something to go with
salmon? I think so, yes. Just a touch.
Just a touch
Not
of the
too much, otherwise the talk would come thick and fast. They don't overlap.
They act so well together, of course, don't they?
Oh, I mean, perfect.
And the thing that I like, too, is, I mean, the Dame Judy Dench, of course, has been involved in so many, for want of the better word, serious productions, yet the two of them could do something like A Fine Romance, which is a very gentle situation comedy, but beautifully done, well honed.
Yes, or the show in which I fell in love with her, of course. Mm. And that was Cabaret, when she fronted Cabaret.
Yes, yes.
And she did the singing and the dancing as well. She was absolutely magnificent in that. I think she has her doubts about herself, her own performance in that show, because she's voiced them from time to time. But that was an absolutely splendid show. I really, it's one of my favourite shows, I think, the way it was particularly portrayed here in London at that time.
And a fine example, too, of how a show business marriage, which indeed can be put under an enormous amount of stress, can last for a good long time, okay. Particularly when, on occasions, because Michael, of course, does an enormous amount of work, as you say, but I suppose Judy Dench's name is probably better known than that of Michael, just about to the general public.
Yes, I suppose so, yes. Yeah? Yes, I suppose so.
Just a wee bit.
Hmm, possibly.
Well, he hasn't been knighted and she's received an honour, you see.
Well, there you are, isn't it? But it's a good table, though, isn't it, really?
It is indeed, yes. So we've got Peter Ustinov, Nicholas Montserrat, Johnny Dankworth, or John Dankworth.
John Dankworth. John Dankworth, yes.
Yeah. He was Johnny with the Seven, but John, since
that's right.
When he went on to symphony orchestras.
His own respect.
He did. Dame Judy Dench and Michael Williams, possibly Cliff popping round for...
That's right, yes.
For the coffee or...
For the old coffee and liqueurs.
Yes. Smoked salmon. Your wife, of course, is there, Mary.
Oh, Mary's there, of course, yes. Oh, yes, she's there. Yes. Mary will... I hate to say this, but Mary will do the cooking. It's not that we proportion tasks to that extent, but I'm not terribly good at that sort of thing.
Really?
And I'm aware of my limitations. Oh, we all are, aren't we, Steve?
Yes, but I happen to be a pretty decent cook myself.
Oh, do you? Oh, well, yes. Would you like to come round and do the... I mean, we pay a very good rate.
Do you now? Yes. £5 an hour?
Yes, or at least that.
At least that. So she's going to do all of the cooking. Would you therefore be doing the washing up and that sort of stuff?
Oh, yes, 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 I would, yes. I'd be lending a hand. I'd be sort of laying the table, doing the odd things around the place, washing up as we go, you know, and possibly doing the washing up afterwards.
Right.
You're slaving over a hot sink. You know how it is.
Right.
But you haven't asked about the pud.
No, but I haven't. I was just going to remind people that we have smoked salmon and beef stroganoff. What sort of dessert would you go for?
Well, you know, I have grown over the years to be an absolute fanatic about crème brûlée.
Ah.
Now, they've got to be done properly. They've got to be in the little pot.
Mm.
And that I test a crème brûlée by getting a teaspoon and just hitting it on top. And if it goes, then you know that crust of brown sugar has absolutely hardened. And that you know you've got that creamy sort of egg custard stuff underneath. It's absolutely beautiful.
Mm.
Delicious. I used to make... And I picked it up from the Evening Standard many, many, many years ago, a recipe for, what's the, in a glass, the, you know, that you put alcohol in and it's a cream in a glass.
A cream drink.
Mm, it's not really a drink, it's more of a thick cream.
Yes.
I can't remember the name of it.
No,
I used to do that.
To me eventually, did you?
I make it with a sort of strong sherry or a port. It was very nice indeed.
Mm.
But, damn it, I've forgotten the name.
Is that an Alexander?
No, it's not an Alexander. It's not a drink. It's a sweet.
It's a sweet.
It's a sweet, yes. It's a sort of, somebody will phone it and tell us.
I know what you mean. Yeah, what on earth do they call it?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I'm having a crème brûlée.
You're having a crème brûlée.
That's right.
How do you manage to stay so slim if you're eating things like crème brûlée then? Or is this a sort of one-off?
It's never been a problem.
No?
Aren't I lucky? It's never been a problem. I only put on weight once, and that was when I came back to Britain from overseas in the 60s. And for some reason, I put on, I suppose about half a stone, and I shed it again. I weighed myself the other day, and do you know, I weigh exactly 11 stone 7, exactly what I did on my 21st birthday.
Good heavens.
This is extraordinary.
It's not all that long ago. I don't know why good heavens, of course.
But I'm very lucky, you know. It's through no will... strong willpower of myself. It just means that I have the sort of metabolism that copes with things like chocky bickies, which I creep in and steal at night before I go to bed.
And creme brulee. Okay, June is on the line to tell us the name of that pudding. Hello, June.
Hello. Are you talking about syllabob?
Yes. No, I'm not.
Are you talking about zabaglione?
That's the one.
That's the one.
That's the zabaglione. Oh, okay.
Isn't it beautiful?
Oh.
It's wonderful. I adored it till I got diabetes and now I can't touch it.
Oh,
of course. What a shame.
So you couldn't have creme brulee either, could you?
No.
No.
No, and that's driving me mad. It was my favourite.
What do you have for pud, then?
Well, I'm waiting for people, restaurants and everybody else, to get wise to the fact that there's ever so many diabetics.
Yes, that's right.
Especially in London. There's hundreds of thousands. And also people that don't like sugar and to come up with wonderful dishes made with canderel or whatever.
Mm.
Do that for me, please.
Pop round to my place, June. I do wonderful dishes with Canderel because, unlike Bob, I do have the problem and therefore have to keep everything low calorie.
Oh, but you have lots of problems, don't you?
And I do indeed, yes. And I'll get them sorted out. I think we've got a psychiatrist on the show later. June, thank you for that. And indeed, we had floods of calls, Bob, to say Zabaglione.
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 Right. We're out of time. Thank you for that list. It was terrific.
Well, thank you.
And it's been a really entertaining hour. Marvellous to see you.
I've enjoyed it.
I hope it's not too long before we come face to face again. Maybe you'd like to interview me the next time.
I'd love to. I'd love to, Doug, when you see him, okay?
I indeed, tomorrow morning, indeed, that will be. Bob, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Right, we're going to have a little more travel news now, crossing to the AA and Graham Lyle.
The A205 Catford Road. There's a broken down bus by Catford Bridge Station. We expect some delays there. Lancaster Terrace, affected by burst water main repairs at the junction with the A40 Bayswater Road, is closed there. There are local diversions in force and still heavy traffic nearby on the A40. Ealing, the A406 Gunnersbury Avenue. There's emergency gas board work at the junction with Crosslands Avenue. You'll find temporary lights are in operation and they're slowing things down in both directions. Strand eastbound, three sets of roadworks between Trafalgar Square and Aldwych. They're slowing things down. And the A2 East Rochester Way at Bexley. There's a contraflow between the Danson Interchange and the Black Prince Interchange. The M25 anti-clockwise. Still some delays up to Junction 2, the A2 Interchange, due to roadworks at the South Orbital roundabout. M25 clockwise, that's heavy around Junction 15, the M4 Interchange. And still quite busy anti-clockwise in Surrey between Junctions 8 and 6, Reigate and Godstone, due to the weight of traffic, though it is starting to ease now. Graham Lyle, AA Road Watch.
Graham, thank you. In the next hour of the Steve Jones Show, we look at women and words and also exorcism. All that happening between 7 and 8 on Talkback Radio, 11:52.
When your lady feels down, don't fret or frown. See me, Texas Tom. I can fix her. Cause diamonds and pearls won't win back that girl. Buy a new bathroom suite with a mixer. Here at Texas I sell taps and towel rails as well. Shower screens going for a song. And at the risk of being boring, I've even got flooring. At Texas, you just ask for time.
This is London Talkback Radio, 11:52 a.m., 261 meters, medium wave.
The 7 o'clock news, this is Sally Arthey. Three of the four people who spent 15 years behind bars for the IRA pub bombings at Guildford and Woolwich are free tonight. The Court of Appeal quashed convictions against all four after hearing that police officers had lied and made up evidence at the original trial. The Lord Chief Justice, Lord Lane, said if Surrey police officers were prepared to lie before the jury, then the whole of their evidence becomes suspect. This afternoon, Carol Richardson, Gerard Conlon and Patrick Armstrong walked free from the Old Bailey. The fourth, Paul Hill, was released but immediately rearrested, pending a hearing in Belfast tomorrow on a separate murder conviction. After his release, Gerard Conlon said he can never forgive British justice.
I know what happened was a tragedy at Guildford, Woolwich, Birmingham. But you don't compound a tragedy by making other tragedies. I feel bitter towards the judiciary, towards the police who framed me, fabricated evidence. But I've nothing but time and respect for all the English people who helped me.
The Director of Public Prosecutions has started a criminal inquiry into the conduct of Surrey Police during the original inquiry into the Guildford bombing. And the Deputy Chief Constable of Surrey, David Williams, has announced that two serving officers have been suspended. Home Secretary Douglas Hurd says the inquiry must get to the truth.
There has been a serious miscarriage of justice, and that must cause everybody anxiety, regret, and deep concern. But there was a miscarriage of justice, and that certainly is a blow to the criminal justice system, which the system itself, the police, prosecution service, and the courts have now corrected insofar as they can.
Two aftershocks have hit San Francisco Bay following Tuesday's quake, which claimed at least 273 lives. From San Francisco, Nick Peters.
The latest aftershock just before dawn measured 5 on the Richter scale and was centered in the Santa Cruz area to the south of here. In Santa Cruz itself, teams are clearing a collapsed shopping complex where officials say no one survived. The clear-up work hampered by one shop worker's family who refused to give up hope.
We love you!
Meanwhile, in Oakland, the grim task of pulling cars and bodies from between the collapsed sections of the Nimitz Freeway begins in earnest. Nick Peters, IRN, San Francisco.
Britain's unemployment figures have fallen again by 50,000. The seasonally adjusted total now stands at 1.6 million, or 6% of the population. That's lower than the average figure for the European community. But it's fueled fears in the city that with the unemployment situation easing, union negotiators will press harder for higher wage settlements. Britain and Argentina have agreed to patch up government relations that were broken off during the Falklands War 7 years ago. In a joint